I don't know if I'm allowed to say this.
You can say whatever you like.
But more passes for an easier course that they know they won't get work,
yeah.
Right? So they have to come back for a level three. And it's that point I'm like, they're trying to make the perfect course for the perfect candidate working in the perfect job. None of them exist. No. So I'm like, who's employing these people? Because we're not making enough money because there's too many shops.
We've got shops that are locked into kind of a lack of ambition because you're terrified of hitting 90,000.
Yeah.
And then having to VAT register. So, you know at £91,000, you're immediately 17 grand a year worse off.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can understand that, but it does breed a lack of ambition.
Oh, I hear all this other warm and gooey stuff they say about opening a shop. The thing I didn't do was what I'm learning now after 15 years is the maths.
Yeah.
Do the maths after 90 grand and you'll realise how fucking hard it is.
Hi, welcome to the Noble Barber Podcast. I'm Anthony LeBand and we'll be talking to various people in the industry who've made it and their journey and how they got here. Talking honest, cutting through the crap and making sure your story and their story is heard to help your business and hopefully mine. If you haven't already, please hit the subscribe button and I hope you enjoy this episode. Hi there. Welcome to another episode of the Noble Barber Podcast. I'm Anthony LeBan. I'm here today with Luke Dolan.
That's me.
Hey, mate.
How
good
you doing?
To meet
you. Right?
Thank you very much for coming in. How you doing?
I'm very good. I'm very
excellent.
Good.
We met at Barber Connect when we took this up there for the weekend and we had a very brief chat. And I spoke to you for probably about 5 or 6 minutes and coming away from it, I was like, I've got to make sure I get you on. So thanks so much for coming in.
That's all right. No problem.
We've already started nattering this morning and
yeah.
And got a lot covered.
Where do you want to start?
Maybe we should start filming some. But maybe bring us up to date. You know, what was your entrance into barbering and maybe up to your very first shop opening?
I've done so much. So I'll do it really quickly. And I've said this story many, many times. I started cutting hair in 96. 96, 97. My dad said I couldn't leave home until I got a job. And I couldn't leave college until I got a job. So I literally went out the next day, walked through Harrow Town Centre, and I saw an apprentice sign on a hairdresser's. So I went in, I had purple hair, I looked in absolute state, and the bloke gave me a job.
Excellent.
And I'd say I kind of enjoyed it. I'm not going to say I was suddenly like this natural born, like gifted hairdresser. I suppose I enjoyed it. And then later on, me and my partner ended up, she got pregnant and then I sort of left. So then I fell away from hairdressing. I didn't do anything. I was an estate agent, I did sales, blah, blah, blah. And then eventually ended up in quite a good job as a head of customer services for a sister company to Nintendo. And then that was awful.
Right.
Like one of the worst jobs I've ever
had.
You're
not a corporate man after all.
No, I enjoyed corporate world to a point because I was in it for a while, like a decade.
Oh, right.
And it was good, but it was so stressful. And working it was a different kind of culture. It was very toxic. I wasn't very well as well at that point. And then I just happened to be, I used to take my kids to the barbers there, my two young boys. And he knew I used to be a hairdresser. I went in one day, he was single man in the shop, and he, because one of his barbers had left, incidentally, that barber is now working at my shop.
Fantastic.
like 6 degrees of separation. But I was sat there, and he sort of looked at me, and he jokingly said, why don't you pick up a pair of scissors and give me a hand? And I kind of, like, I shit myself, really.
And you hadn't cut hair bare for a decade.
I kind of, like, I'd done my boys briefly, but with a pair of scissors. But I was a hairdresser.
Hmm.
And then I thought about it, and I thought, I wonder, could I do it? So I went back and saw him later on in the that evening, and I said, put my head around the door. I said, are you serious? He said, yeah. He says, you look like you've got, like, a friendly face. You could do it. And that's... You know, I said, okay. So I started working, did my job, the stressful, horrible job, Monday to Friday. And I went and did this on Saturdays. First haircuts, that first day, I absolutely shit myself. Because I didn't have the skill set. I was rubbish, awful. And they let me butcher their hair, but I had a great time, an absolute blast. So I then, that was around about November. So I did that through Christmas. And then bit the bullet and I left my job. The company was dying anyway. Mm. So I got out and then started cutting hair, yeah. And then 4 years later, I opened my shop in South Oxley.
Wow.
And that was that.
So big learning curve from for opening your first shop?
Yes,
or
it was.
Or did that feel like natural territory?
I'd been an estate agent. I'd worked in customer services. Like that was my main, in corporate land. I'd done the sales thing, but the sales thing I'd gone on to management pretty quickly. So I got out of the negotiator role. I was in a sales manager, then marketing manager, then ended up in customer services, and the estate agency introduced me to lots of solicitors. So actually opening a shop, how I got the deal was through a solicitor who I knew from the estate agency. So that came my way because of that.
Perfect.
And then I knew the conveyancing route, so that wasn't scary or daunting. And then running a shop, but the whole customer service, the whole front end of marketing thing was my bag.
Yeah.
And it kind of all fell into place.
But so running, you were well equipped for it? You thought you were?
I thought I was.
On paper,
I likened, by the end, I know I'm skipping forward a few years, at one point when I had the few shops, but mainly Watford and Ruislip, it was, I tell people it was like a swan with a broken foot. Because they always say...
limping underwater.
Yeah. So I was just going around in circles, back end. It looked great. We had the following on social media. I was doing stuff all over the, Uppercut Ambassador. I was flying all over the world. It was amazing. But back end, it was woeful. It was awful.
So you had those two stores for a few years?
I was in Oxy for probably close to a decade.
Oh, God.
I'm Ruislip High Street. I'm still on Ruislip High Street, but I've moved down the road from the first shop. So I've been there, let's say 11, 12 years now, roughly. I did have another shop in Stanmore, which is sort of like a nice little triangle. That was a project where I sort of took over the barber area.
Right.
And it had a spa upstairs. But that didn't work because we had... We had a board of directors.
Yeah, that's gonna
for one shot. It wasn't enough money. It was destined to fail.
And so when was it? This is mid
2017, 18 potentially.
So you had the three. And then when I spoke to you at Barber Connect, we managed to get to Moscow quite quickly in a 6 minute conversation.
Well,
how did that come about?
Well, I worked with Uppercut. They made me ambassador, but coming close to, it's 10 years, almost to the day, I think. Maybe turn of this year, going into 2025, about 10 years. And they've been fantastic.
And you guys have stuck together all through this?
All through this, yeah. It's funny, if you watch their social media now, they're doing loads of things in Singapore and Asia, and it's like watching what we were doing 8 or 9 years ago. It's that kind of, they're doing all the hangouts and bits and pieces, really doing well for them. But yeah, they've stuck by me the whole time.
And you ended up, so you were doing some show work or some education with them in Moscow?
Well, they were just trying to open more European countries, as a distributor, new territories. And Europe was the expanding market. So they were just, as Uppercut, we were growing in stature, that these countries were contacting them saying, we want to stock you, we need some education, we need this and blah, blah, blah. So that's where the ambassadors come in, because we get sent over to these countries, we educate their team, and then it goes from there.
So how do you go from kind of a bit of education in Moscow to Luke's Barbershop?
Well,
Moscow.
It's a story. But it's like a magic trick. When someone tells you what the actual magic trick is, it doesn't actually seem that, think, oh, it's a bit boring, actually. It was
the tiger was in the cupboard underneath the stage.
So it seems a little bit mysterious. I got a shop in Russia. It was like I'd been out there in 2015, I think. And then that was with one company, and then the distribution changed. So the Uppercut guy, the first guy, that they went on something else. So, and it was just as there was a bit of a change in the HQ here, and the European team, Uppercut European team. So I was, there's another Russia trip came out to meet a new distributor. So I went on my own. And And this, I just went over there and I got on really well with the guy. So he used to take me out there a lot to do education. And I went to all sorts of weird places. And it went for a good 18 months. He helped me get a business visa out there and stuff so I could go there a few years for, you know, lots of times. And it was
proper Russian fixer.
Proper Russian fixer. He was ex-K, he's ex-KGB.
Oh, mate.
Honestly. Honestly, the Russian thing, like that's probably for a pint over at like, one point.
Some
stuff that went on. Anyway, it was great. But he had other businesses. His wife had a really wonderful salon that did aesthetics and stuff like that. And she was a fantastic hairdresser. And he had lots of units around. He was, you know, he did sell American Crew over there and he'd made a lot of money that way. So he had property in Moscow. And he had a salon in this place called Shablovska. I probably just murdered that for the Russians, but yeah, Shablovska, which was about three stops away from Red Square. So it was like a,
wow.
It was like in a real economic area as well. Like they had like universities and stuff there. Really real eclectic bunch of people. And he had this salon that wasn't doing very well. We said, why don't we turn it into a Luke's? And I said, like, why? What does
that
entail?
You're not going to say no, are
you? No, I didn't say that. Did I make a... I didn't make a euro. I didn't... I didn't make a penny.
Oh, it's worth it for the stories,
I just...
Mate.
It was, you know... if you knew my backstory as a kid and some of the sort of difficulties I went through sort of like late teens, early 20s to... I'm not going to go into it really, but... To have,
like
to have this opportunity, yeah. I was never going to say no.
No.
But I think actually thinking about it as an arc is that I only thought about getting it open. That was my, like, if you want to talk manifestation and all that kind of stuff, I only ever saw the shop open. It was never like longevity.
No.
I didn't really know how this was going to work. It was just like, let's get it open.
Yeah.
So we got it open. We did staff it. Did it do well? I don't think so. It did all right. It was sometimes busy. I used to go out there and my column would get booked up, but I was, you know, it was my name was above the door. We had some really weird, like just very weird customers used to come. Not weird, but you know, we'd have attaches to ambassadors and helicopter pilots.
Yeah, we're definitely having a pint, aren't we, Luke?
helicopter
so
pilots.
So this was 2018?
This got open in, I'm going to say 2018.
So this is pre-pandemic.
And then, yeah, the pandemic closed all my shops, effectively. Well, it closed everybody's shops.
Yeah,
it's not just like, oh, poor me. It was like the whole industry. It's the thing I never thought that
and
could
there was
happen.
Just not, and that was it. You couldn't, no comeback. All the shops were closed and gone.
It was just trying to keep them open. It just
out.
Happened to be that the shop in Oxy, that the lease was coming to an end. He was looking to put that up and I was a, you know, there's a lot of things that were going on with that shop at the time anyway, behind closed doors. And I thought, I just, it was just had enough. And at one point you have to think it's just bricks and mortar, you know, your sanity and what you're doing is worth an awful lot more. So yeah, we moved on from that, but yeah, COVID was, 2019 was an incredible year and it's, the tough thing coming back, especially for me at my age, because I was doing all these things in Europe and I've traveled to, done education over 30, 38 different countries or something ridiculous for just putting hair on the floor. It's incredible. Very, very blessed career. But then all of that came to a stop, And then when everything came back after COVID, the phone would stop ringing.
Yeah.
I had a contract with a PR company that used to do all the activations for Foot Locker, Adidas, Nike. I used to work with Boots. I used to work with some other brands that just escape me right now.
Yeah.
But we had these wonderful contracts.
The deafening silence of the door bell not ringing.
It just stopped.
Jeez.
And it's not like, oh, once again, poor me.
No,
it's
no,
just.
But, it's brutal. I mean, I shut my business. I had my business, which I closed down in, I closed that down in 2000 and... Oh, what was it? 2011,
right?
All the bank crash, everything else, and my
lease
was done. And I'm like, you know what? But it really does hurt. I mean, I must admit, I think there was a point quite soon after it was all closed, done, dusted, that I suddenly kind of went,
yeah.
You know what I mean? And I got that opportunity in 2012 to then go, right, I'm going to rewrite myself.
Mm.
Is that kind of what happened with you, or was it, were you just relieved, or was it more painful than that?
What, the closing the shops? No, I don't. I'm overly ambitious, so I knew that I'd be able to make it, and I could sort of deflect into something else. I suppose it was just my ego having to deal with it. I think it was like me thinking of, I got to this point where, because.
But it is ego. I mean, you know, it is ego. And you need that ego to want to put you through, yourself through doing a shop, doing some shows, doing all these things that give everyone and anyone anxiety and stress. But you want to do them because you want to show that you can.
Yeah.
Taking it away or getting it gone is brutal.
It is brutal. And you have to take a long, hard look at yourself in the mirror and just realise like who you are. Because you sort of become this version of yourself. For social media or when you're standing up on stages and stuff like that, you morph into this person and you're like, am I actually that person? And my ego, it took a massive knock. But, you know, I'm glad it happened because I'm a better person for it.
Oh, no, I'm exactly the same. I didn't enjoy 2011 in any way, shape or form, and I don't think I really enjoyed 2009
to 2010. But I think a good message to put out there, though, is that everything comes at a cost. Mm. And, you know, I'm very blessed and I'm lucky to have stood on the stages of, you know, and there's some guys at the very top that people look at now, and I'm very lucky to say they're my friends. And we've all had, like, it came at a cost. We lost relationships. A lot of the people I know at the very top have lost, like, they're now divorced or their partners or whatever. Like,
oh, the demands on you.
You sort of separate yourself, and flying all around the world sounds great. But when you're not seeing your loved ones, it does come at a cost. Good stuff comes at a cost as well as bad stuff.
Yeah. No, I think that's it. I mean, I think definitely it's hard, like you say, from the ego. And for anyone who's, you know, who's lost their business or in the process of shutting their business and all that kind of stuff, I think it's important to kind of be kind to yourself and give yourself a bit of a break, that this is just another experience. It's just another learn.
It's just bricks and mortar.
And it's just the next thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And
it's all survivable and more.
And for me, it was, I realised that your market value is still your market value. Mm. The fact that you're standing in a certain shop or in a certain area has no bearing. Mm. You know, if you're good and you love what you do, you can stand anywhere.
Yeah.
And your market value is still your market value.
Yeah.
People are still going to find you. So that's, you know, I'd never seen it that way. So
that level of kind of angst does give you kind of very clear glass to look through, I think.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. When there's nowhere else to look. Well, yeah, there's no excuses, no noise to deflect you when you are actually there and your business have gone and you are just back as you. I think it does you the world of good. It did me the world of good.
Well, it taught me accountability.
Yeah.
And that's so important in life anyway. You know, you've got to be able to take it. And sometimes the brutal truth, regardless of what happens, if your name is above the door, your name's on the lease, it's your fault.
Yeah. But you know, we're now post-COVID. So this newborn world of yours is all post-COVID. So what would you say? New Luke's 2.0 or 3.0 or what are we on? Is from 23 and a half years, 3 years old?
It's 3 years old now. So we're coming closer to
And Moscow went as well untethered. There was no...
No, that was... in the end, it was...
There was no spiked umbrella on a bridge anywhere.
No, you had to be careful going to Costa. No, we had to... You know, it was amicable. It was like, we're never going to get any money from Putin. There was no, and we made the decision right at the very beginning.
Yeah, cool.
And he was like, you know, my partner out there, he was like, look, I'm just going to do it. Because he had a wholesale shop beside it. So he was able to just kind of swallow that in because that was doing all right.
So so you're at the other side of COVID.
Yep.
You've done all of this. You've had the T-shirt, you've bought the badge.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I mean, you know, I climbed back on and set up another company in 2014. So I had 3 years of licking wounds and catching my breath and making a plan. You sound like you bounce much quicker.
I haven't had that. Well, my son now works with me, and he trained during COVID to be a barber. And he's now, you know, the manager of the shop, and it's not just me, it's the pair of us together, forging a future together.
And this is close to where your original...
Yeah, we're about like 50 yards down the road. Cool. In probably what is a better space, even though it's smaller, the rent's a lot cheaper. Yeah. But even though that's, you know, I think it's about to go up, but hey-ho. That was okay. It's doing really well. Reese is doing well. He's the manager there, and I've got a great team. But I wanted to do something a bit more. I've done a lot of education, and you probably realised, I've done most of the doors in the arena of barbering. Yeah. I've managed to walk through. But I thought I wanted to have something a bit more profound to walk into, or to look, try and make some changes in the time horizon left to me, which is, you know, if I retire and at 65, I've got 20 years of trying to impact somewhere and do something. So the thing I didn't really know anything about was state education. I'd done private education. I've got the academy set up and stuff.
Yeah.
But I started doing lecturing at West Harts College to looking after the under 17s and the 17-year-olds and stuff, just to get an understanding of things. Because there's so many issues.
How's that for a learning curve?
Oh my God. Where do I even begin? There's so many different podcasts for this, I think.
So you're having to follow the national criteria for the NVQ or the VTEC or whatever.
And it's, I don't really want to, you know, I don't want to put people off from doing it.
No, but was that a struggle?
Yeah, because it doesn't, the actual course itself, because a lot of us within industry look at state education and go, it's not good enough.
Mm.
Which it probably isn't. But then when you actually go and put yourself in that space, you're like, they're doing the best they can with what they can. Because, you know, you don't get a bunch of middle-class kids that want to go and do barbering, right? And then also these kids have gotten in there, like, have they got GCSEs? Probably not. What kind of backgrounds have they got? What is their context? It's just, and then, you know, the fact that they've actually picked a course... You know, some of them have got like undiagnosed issues or dyslexia and ADHD and all this other stuff. And you've got to try and teach them. You know, there's a lot more parameters and context that we don't seem to realise as an industry. We just palm it off as like, it's just not good enough. Mm. You're like, well, this is why I went there, to go, well, what can be done? And then you also look in within it's so heavily regulated, but we're a completely unregulated industry. Yeah. And you're like, it doesn't...
Doesn't balance. I mean, I've had exactly that from both sides. The colleges saying, you know, we want, you know, we'd love these names, we'd love these barbers, we'd love these people to come, like you are, get involved. But it's not that straightforward.
No, it's not that straightforward. And they, you know, any barbers out there that want to get involved and actually, you know, spend a bit of time, you probably need a couple of days a week. There's probably openings. You could probably just go and help and see what it's like. Mm. And I think if you bolster or go along and sort of like help kind of bring it together as an actual barbering college, because a lot of these things you go to, they're set up for hairdressing.
Yeah.
Right. So barbering is just kind of a bolt on. And a lot of these kids that have gone into barbering feel like this is all they've got left.
Mm.
But then they go into an environment where they just feel like there's nothing really for them. Because it's just hairdressing or beauty.
Yeah.
You know, there's no barber's chairs, they're still sharing clippers. You know, there's so many things that they don't have. So if you can go there and help actually make it better over a time horizon of a few years, you might actually make people will want to go there, which then makes the people coming out the other end. It's like an intake of any school.
Yeah, yeah.
You get kids that want to go there, they come out the other end, you know, like ready for the world. And this is what you've got to try and do.
Yeah. So you give 2 days a week?
Well, 2 days a week. And I now, I think from September, I'll be teaching the evening class as well. Oh. It's quite a bit of time, but it's like I'm learning a lot myself at the same time, especially educationally. It is tough though, because you just want to help everybody.
Yeah.
And some people you just... just can't.
No. I mean, I'm, you know, like I say, I mean, I think I've loved training. My whole career has been, has had a kind of training backbone from, you know, from the minute I qualified. I've never done the state route. I did, you know, we have a patience demanding local college.
Yeah.
That is failing for many reasons, and management, I think, has got to be at the heart of that one.
Yeah.
But it is a problem that we've, you know, that keeps coming up about getting these guys qualified, getting them enthusiastic, and going to on a course where, you know, the arse is hanging out the trousers in the actual criteria is going to lose them, isn't it?
But the difficulty is that, you know, I've got two minds. It's one, I want to help everybody, but two, from an industry point of view, we want it to be more difficult.
Yeah.
We need to say no.
Yeah.
And it's there's the this like a juxtaposition between the two.
The bar's got to be at,
yeah.
It's trying to find the Goldilocks point for the bar to be set, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And I'm on the board I sit on a panel for the sitting guilds as like an employer validation as an advisor. And you know, I can almost see they're incrementally trying to make it a little bit easier. And I'm like, but we've got oversaturation is the thing that will kill us.
More passes, more money.
More passes, but they, you know, I don't know if I'm allowed to say this.
You can say whatever you like.
But they're more passes for an easier course that they know they won't be eligible, they won't get work, right? So they have to come back for a level three. You see? And it's that point, I'm like, wow. Yeah. Like, so it's... They're trying to make the perfect course for the perfect candidate working in the perfect job. And none of them exist. No. None of them do. So I'm like, who's employing these people? Because we're not making enough money because there's too many shops.
Yeah. Well, this, it comes back to, I mean, on the whole, everyone says that the best barbers come through the apprenticeship scheme.
I would say that. But no one's got the money to do an apprenticeship.
I mean, you get nothing for it. We do have some apprentices, but it's really hard. It's really hard. And, you know, my apprentices are amazing. Most of them are still in the company. I think they're incredible. But it's harder and harder every year to stick with it. And you get no funding, no support, higher regular. I can understand why fewer and fewer people do it. But if you then back that up alongside a college that's bringing out kids that aren't really getting the quality of training there, they're not getting trained in the shops. They're not getting trained in college.
Yeah,
you can write it on the back of a postage stamp why the industry's struggling.
Yeah, and we're in uncharted territory. Really, we're in this place that I don't actually know what will happen. I think rented chair will devour the industry because we're at a point where inequality is exploding. And the, you know, inflation and what have you. So now you're needing to be on a certain amount of money, which shops cannot afford to pay in the old scheme.
Well, and I think that all comes into it, isn't it? You know, we've got shops that are locked into kind of a lack of ambition because you're terrified of hitting 90,000.
Yeah.
And then having to VAT register. So, you know, and you know at £91,000, you're immediately 17 grand a year worse off.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can understand that, but it does breed a lack of ambition.
Yeah, it does. Massively.
And with a lack of ambition, it also means a lack of income. You know, if you've got a company that's capped at 90, whichever way you're doing it, right, I'm not even getting into that, but you're capped at 90, you can't spend money inside the company that doesn't add up to 90. So if you've got to bring on an apprenticeship, you've got to pay their salary, you've got to fund their training, you've got to have other staff that will help train them.
Yeah.
It's impossible to do. So it's only companies that are VAT registered or doing over 90, and there's fewer and fewer of them. With chair rental, it's even less so. And the bugbear with chair rental, which I've got no issue with, is it's great if you've got customers. If you've got no customers, you're screwed.
Yeah.
Now, 50%, 60, 40, 30, 70, whichever way you slice it, 50% of fuck all is fuck all.
It's fuck all.
And that's what you got. And you've got these young kids who've got no clients standing in a shop wanting to earn £500-600 a week, not recognising that they've got to be turning over.
£500-600, but they want more, right? They want more because the information that, like, the information era that we're in, we can call it social media or the internet or whatever you want to call it, but it's just, there is too much information.
Like, I've heard it from 17-year-olds' mouths, right? I just had a group that finished in whatever, August or July, and I asked them, what's next? Right? Where are you going? And some of them are obviously going nowhere, but some have got jobs. Their thing is, I'm going to go and find a commission shop, and I'm going to get as many customers as possible. I'm going to work as hard as possible. You're like, fair play. Right. And then I'm going to walk them down to a rent-a-chair shop, and I'm going to take all the money myself. Mm. This is what their plan is. So then what's the point of having a shop?
Yeah.
And this is the, and that's the information that, like, dare I say it, like, some barbers that are so desperate for clout on internet, on social media, and they're putting out there saying, oh, earn 10 grand a month, earn $15,000 a month. It's like following this US model. Rent a chair works in America because their shops are five times bigger.
Yeah. And also the taxation system's different, state to state. You can almost pinch which state is doing, you know, where the booth rental is on state. Because the better the tax breaks in the state, you see more tax. You know, here we get no tax breaks.
No,
And you know, and they're still wanting. You still got to pay your tax.
You still got to pay tax. Yeah, you have to.
And if you're making, I mean, I don't matter. Yeah, there's sums off the top of my head, but if you are managing to do 10 grand a month,
that's 120.
You know, that's
24 grand a year VAT.
24 grand VAT and another 26 in tax.
I think. The maths is, you know, I hear all this other warm and gooey stuff they say about opening a shop. The thing I didn't do was what I'm learning now after 15 years is the maths.
Yeah.
Do the maths after 90 grand and you'll realise how fucking hard it is, right? Like, I built a subscription service into my business, right? It's so successful that I can't afford it.
Yeah.
Because now with VAT and it's fully digital, I can't afford it.
No.
Unless I ruin all the value by adding 20% on, our lives stay exactly the same. It's more expensive for the customer, but I can't afford it.
Yeah. But that's what I mean. It hits exactly that in the fact that it just breeds this, it breeds it on ambition. You just daren't be ambitious about it.
Well, and Labour, this new Labour government, are already telling us how rubbish it is, are already saying that they might drop it to 45 grand.
Mm.
But then every rent-a-chair shop is under 45.
Mm.
So this is we're on chart. I don't know what happens next.
I mean, I think that's it. I think every area of our industry is veering towards a cliff. It's just none of us can quite see
we can't
see how far the drop is on the other side.
I would like some of the, say, the magazines and stuff like that, and some of the bigger companies out there, you know, some of the big clipper companies that are making the money, that just to help us, because what they're doing is that they're promoting, put your prices up. They think they're helping, but you're pushing us further and further into this bracket under 90, right? Where people don't know what to do thereafter.
Yeah.
And all this, help us do a movement of the VAT. Help us do this.
Yeah.
Because that's where we get if we were all making that little bit of a margin, 20% is the margin that would actually help and bring more apprentices and have more money.
Change the model completely.
It would.
You know, But it's, it's a hard water clear through.
They're not going to do it.
No.
They'd be better off coming out in the press tomorrow and saying all haircuts are available.
Yep.
That would
be exactly the same thing, really.
And then every company would have to be a VAT and all the prices would go up. Yeah. The prices, because the uneven playing field is that you're rewarded for going over 90 by charging 20%, but no one else is.
Yep.
And that's
oh, no, I got you.
You know.
So you've gone through all of this. You've handled it. You've done it. And now, what are you up to at the moment? Explain what you're... Bryce slipped to Hackney?
Nomad, or Miguel.
Yeah.
He's such a bright and intelligent and creative guy that's done so well. But he's almost a little... Like, if you see some of his stories on his... on his social media, that he's almost crippled with, like, some of this ADHD. He's just got the diagnosis through and all this other stuff, and he sort of really struggles with some stuff. And the fact that he's got a shop in India, a shop in Berlin, a shop in London, he has a grooming range, he has 700,000 subscribers on YouTube, like, you know, and I've known him a long time. We've spoken for over a decade about all kinds of issues, and we've helped each other along the way. And then he approached, there was a couple of us that he had in mind to help him with Hackney, because he just needed to because he couldn't get there. And the team that
were working in Hackney, he'd never, this new team, he'd never worked with them. And he was like, I can't, I'm in Liverpool, I'm doing this, I want to do a documentary and all this sort of stuff. So he approached me and he said, would you become my partner and help me out with the shop? And I was like, yeah, okay. You know, let's see what we can do. Because I totally understand what he's doing. You know, that brand and he's the whole travel theme, and he wants to theme the shops to be like going on holiday, going into a different country. It's really beautiful. Mm. And he's into the ritual of the beards and stuff like that. So I really get it. So that's why we're kind of working together.
Are you enjoying it? How long has that been going on?
Only a couple of months now.
Enjoying it?
I am enjoying it. It's
another demand.
It's a different thing, yeah. It sort of takes some of your attention away. Mm. Do you know what I mean? Sometimes, unless, you know, I do tell people that sometimes you've got to, don't worry about passive stuff. You need to sort of like drill down on what you're actually doing. But I think this project could be a really fun one over time. Yeah. So it's just managing the time right with it, really.
Beautiful. Yeah, I keep trying to get Miguel and he's not keen to come on here.
He's just, I think he just gets a little bit.
Oh, no, I just love everything he does. I think the journey is just fascinating. Mate, I am so glad that we've bumped into each other and had a 3-minute conversation about Moscow at Barber Connect. It's been an absolute joy meeting you. I'm so pleased we did it.
Okay.
And
it's been great. Thank you so much.
I'm sure. I think I'm going to drill down more on the whole State College. I might get a few of us together. I've had a couple of conversations and you'd be a good one. We'll maybe try and get you back to have a bit more of a focus point on that, maybe.
Yeah, I do.
If you're going.
I think if part of your thing is cutting through the crap, right?
Yeah.
And I think...
We should have
Some difficult...
Like that?
Some difficult conversations are worth having.
Yeah.
Because that's where that's where the magic is.
Yeah. Really.
That's where the growth is.
Oh, so I think that's a good one. Let's make sure that goes in. I like that. Luke, mate, good luck with... Well, you don't need luck, mate. You've got more resilience than the rest of us. Thank you very much for listening.
Thank you very much.
Welcome to the Noble Barber Podcast. We're always looking for interesting people and interesting stories. If you know someone or you are someone with a great story that you want to share, get in touch and come join me on the sofa. Thanks very much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed the episode and we'll see you next time.